Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 174, recorded on April 4th, 2013. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me tonight is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey. We're doing a show, right?
We are indeed.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. Hey, it's really great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Adam Christensen from the MacCast is also here. Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Hey, it's going really good.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, we have a lot of Facebooky things to talk about tonight.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we do.
All right, we'll see you later. Well, good night, everybody.
Yeah,
it's been a great show.
Okay, we can, because it's somewhat phone-ish, I guess.
Somewhat yeah. Phone-ish.
It is.
That's the best description of their phone I've heard so far.
Actually, it's quite brilliant and genius, if you ask me. Because everybody thought they were going to do one Facebook phone, but they're actually doing, guess what? All these Android phones are now Facebook phones.
Yeah. So
congratulations.
So let's go over what it is exactly. So okay. Facebook today made their big phone announcement today. It's not a single phone, although they do have a phone maker, HTC, that they have partnered with for a very specific phone. What is the HTC
First?
The HTC First. Don't they have an HTC One as well?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Holy crap. Anyway.
And it'll run on the HTC One too, at least one of the models, I believe.
Good.
You know, there's more than one model of one, because that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Let's not talk about that.
This is stupid.
Okay. Anyway.
How many buckets of stupid can we bring in?
Well, let's try and focus on stupid.
We're not even 5 minutes into the show, and we've already had a whole wheelbarrow full of stupid happen.
Okay. Well, there are some interesting things in the Facebook announcement. It's called Facebook Home, right? So they have two different items in this announcement. So there's Facebook Home, which changes the Android lock screen to a Facebook-centered lock screen that briefly shows you the time, but more importantly, allows you to swipe through Facebook updates and notifications that come up. And so these are all loaded in the background as you're going about your day. So the idea is, during those times when you take out your phone because you're too nervous to look at anybody in the coffee shop, you can swipe through and immediately, without going to any application, you immediately get all of the status updates that have been going on throughout the day right on your lock screen without having to go anywhere.
With a giant picture from your friends, and depending upon who your friends are, it's going to be really, really nice when someone's looking over your shoulder at the coffee shop.
Yeah, I was thinking about that because there are definitely photos that my friends post that I don't want full screen on my phone.
Be so awesome.
I'm thinking that this suddenly became the most brilliant phone in the history of the universe, because standing in line at Starbucks, getting ready to use the Starbucks app to buy a drink, and all the baristas know who you are and they like you and they think you're a nice person, and then one of your friend drunk posts
right,
and it shows up as the big image on your home screen. And,
the entire background of your lock screen, yeah.
Like, this is what I like. What's on your lock screen?
It is. It's like chat roulette for your phone.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
It'll be very interesting to see how.
Let's see what.
Oh my god.
Let's hope it doesn't get that bad. If it's that bad, then you need some better friends.
New friends, yeah. You definitely need new.
So when chat roulette first became a big thing, I thought, all right, I need to check this out and see what it is.
No, you don't.
And I realized, oh my God, I need to burn my computer, because, and it also taught me that I should glove up before I shake any guy's hand, period, ever. Yeah.
Or a Carrie Purell.
No, at the very least. I just need to glove up.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Purell's not preventative, Michael.
That's true. It's not preventative. It only kills 99.99% of germs.
But after the fact.
Right. So, but okay. So that part is interesting. And I think that a lot of people will enjoy that. I'm not necessarily one of those people who will. But the thing that they kept talking about throughout the entire presentation is the idea of people versus applications. And I thought that that's a very intriguing notion. The idea that what you really want to do is find out what the people that you are interested in are up to, either in Twitter or Facebook or Vine or whatever. You want to know what they're up to. You don't really care about the apps per se. You just use those apps as a vessel to get that information.
Some people.
For the most part, if you're talking about social applications, that's what you're doing. Because
if you're a Facebook fanatic, absolutely, that is the case. But I don't think as a blanket statement, I'm not buying it.
Well,
right.
Yeah, to some extent, I suppose. So
we're only using our phones for social stuff?
No. The fact is that with the social applications, that's what you're doing. And the idea of when I thought they were going to say, and we're going to aggregate all these things together. And yeah, they're kind of aggregating everything, except if you're talking about what people at Facebook define as everything, they're talking about only stuff they own, which is Facebook and Instagram.
Exactly.
So that's kind of cool. So if you're really into Facebook and Instagram, then that part is going to be awesome for you. Now, the thing that I think is pretty awesome that I actually want is called Chat Heads, which is a retarded name.
Oh my God. Why? What were they thinking? The product is Facebook.
Yeah.
So they go with
They should have called it Path Heads, by the way.
Yeah, because of the rounded icons. Yeah, I would like.
They stole the whole interface from.
I would love Path Heads.
Well, they borrowed. I shouldn't say stole. They heavily were influenced, obviously, by the stuff that Path did, I think.
Well, yeah. You can say that about a lot of stuff.
I mean, I'm not really, that doesn't upset me. So don't anybody take that out of context. I think it's cool, but definitely they were influenced by Path, I think, on the UI for that stuff.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of influence on that style all over the place.
Yeah. I like
where it started, but anyway, it's nice.
Yeah.
The chat heads allow you to, in the same way that messages on your iPhone, the iMessages allow you to not just see iMessages, but also text messages and intercommunicate those two things. This takes it one step further, well, maybe two steps further, by adding Facebook to that mix. Of course, there's no iMessages.
Sure, it includes everything from my Twitter stream and my Google Plus stream as well, right?
No, it's just Facebook and it's just SMS.
Yeah.
Because why would they want to include stuff like that? But, okay, so the way it works is when you get a message from either Facebook or SMS, a little chat head, which is a little circular icon that is relatively small compared to the other stuff on the interface, it pops up a little bubble on the side with a little unread notification on it with the photo of the person it came from. And I think that it even gives you a little preview when it first pops up of what the message is. And then it goes away quickly. So what you're doing is, and this is kind of like Palm Pre-esque stuff, where you can jump into messages while you're doing something else without moving back and forth. So the demo is, you get a message from your buddy saying, hey, what do you want to do tonight? You want to watch this, see this new movie? And you say, yeah, sure. When do you want to go? He goes, you know, what are the show times? And so what you do is you still have this little circle, even though you don't have the, whether or not you have the messages portion up with the keyboard and the actual chat list. So you can hide that part away. You still keep the little bubble and you go into your Fandango. You figure out what the movie times are, and without having to jump back into another app. You just tap the head and say, how about 7:30 or whatever, and send it off. And then you can go back to your to reading your article. And then when that message comes in, it'll pop up. You tap it again, and there's the conversation. And it actually works with multiple conversations, which is cool. And when you're finished with it, you just kind of throw it off your screen.
And plus, you have a great new pickup line.
What? Tap the head?
You know,
you guys aren't allowed to drink anymore.
No, I think people like it when we drink. The alert sound that I want to hear when a chat head message comes up is chat head, roly poly, chat head, eat them up, yum.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but aside from the stupid name, I really like the feature.
I mean, it's interesting. The thing is like, I'm telling you right now, there's a bunch of people at Google getting fired. Just like, who sold us on this open crap?
Yeah.
Now look, they just commandeered our chat. They commandeered our social. What the? And they're going to take all our ad revenue because they're going to sell ads into that home screen too.
Yeah. Well, that is that's one of those things that Zuckerberg was talking about today. Was when
he was loving it. He was on like on cloud nine. He's like, look, we just took control of Android. We took all the money away from Google.
Yeah,
woo-hoo!
Exactly.
And we're gonna own all the users' personal data too. Yay!
Yeah. Well, the fact is, you can't. This stuff isn't gonna come to iOS because it can't be done.
Which is a good thing, in my opinion. I'm glad.
For some people, they want it, though. A lot of people don't want it. I'm just playing devil's advocate
here. Well, you want the features, but you don't want the nefarious stuff that's behind it. And that's the problem with this. I mean, that's my biggest complaint against this. I think technology-wise, yeah, there's some cool features. And I guarantee you there's going to be a bunch of people borrowing a lot of these concepts over on iOS. Now, you can't have it at the OS level, but Apple will potentially pick up on some of these things. You know, I don't know about the chat heads thing. Maybe they're not going to call it that. But
no, they're certainly not going to call it. Nobody in their right mind would call it chat heads.
But I mean, chat heads is basically, in a lot of ways, like you were alluding to, it's very similar to what iMessage does. So Apple built a messaging platform. Facebook wants a similar messaging platform that combines SMS and Facebook chat, and they've got it. You know, in Apple's case, it's iMessage and SMS. So...
Well, I think that the big innovation with chat heads is the fact that it's always there and available to you, so you don't have to switch between applications. It's not necessarily the aggregation of the services.
Have you checked yet? Is the jailbreak version up for iOS yet?
I'm sure it's not, but I don't doubt that it'll happen.
Tomorrow morning, just check.
Yeah, it'll be there by tomorrow.
I mean, honestly, it might already be there. It might have been there for a long time. But I'm sure there'll be a story on Mac Rumors tomorrow.
So you'll have a new reason to jailbreak. You should celebrate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's the Facebook announcement.
The whole thing, from a purely business standpoint, this whole platform, this whole thing that they're doing is genius. Everybody thought they were doing a phone. Yes. They're not. They're doing software that can be installed on not every Android phone. You know, it's a limited number of phones, but the most popular Android phones out there. I mean, the S3, they said they're going to have it coming to the Galaxy S4. They've got it on, and they've got partners who are going to be rolling it into and having it be a default on the operating system. I mean, again, Google has, I can't even imagine what's going on at Google right now. They're just like freaking out.
Yeah, they basically they took the app launcher and replaced it with a Facebook.
They replaced everything. Launcher. They replaced the chat. They replaced the ads. They replaced the launcher. They just pwned Android.
Oh yeah, hardcore. Mm-hmm. You know, this has to be the ultimate salt in the wound for Google, because when they came up with Android, the idea was, let's make something that can overtake iOS. And gives control of the phone experience, excuse me, back to users, and takes it away from cell service providers. And what they found was that in reality, they gave self-service providers yet another way to take complete control over the user experience instead of giving the users control. And then Amazon did their own thing with Android, so it doesn't look like Android anymore. Yeah, they forked it.
So this is almost even worse because they didn't fork it. And Zuckerberg was like giddy about explaining how they didn't fork it. Then the other thing he was kind of giddy about, which is funny, is like Google knew what we were doing. You know, they knew they know we're doing this. I think they didn't quote unquote know. I think they knew that they were doing something. Stuff, but I can hardly believe that they like knew.
Yeah, Zuckerberg's giddiness, I think, was because he got to stand on stage and in the middle of his big press conference for the whole world, let Google know, without actually saying it, we pwned you.
There's a website that does that. I bet he sent that in an email to Eric Schmidt.
He probably did.
Yeah, I mean, they got to be reeling on all fronts. You know, the deals with the carriers, the deals, you know, it's multiple levels of attack, really. I don't even look at this as much of a slam against Apple. It almost benefits Apple for their segment of the market. The people that worry about, you know, these open platforms. Because I think it sort of proves some of the complaints about, look, when it's open, you know, you're exposing a lot of stuff, potentially.
Yeah.
And not that Apple is perfect in this regard, right? There's still privacy concerns, but not at the level that I now have on these Android devices, especially when this is going to be pre-installed by carriers and most people aren't even going to realize what's going on.
No, and most people won't care, actually.
The other thing that Facebook is being brilliant about is right up until now, Facebook's core business is a web platform. And what do we know that's happening on the web with cookies and tracking? It's being closed up. I mean, Mozilla's on an affront to make sure that tracking can't happen as much as possible on the web or that users can turn it off very easily. Actually, it's coming defaulted to off, right?
Yeah.
So those avenues are getting shut down. Facebook makes their money off of advertising, and they're a purely web-based company. So another reason I see for this device coming out now and for them working so hard on this is on the mobile platform, they get around all that, right? This isn't a web browser. This is an app. And apps don't have the kinds of rules and restrictions that are being imposed on web browsers yet.
Right. And since it's an app that handles so many of the things people are doing in social networks anyhow, once you're in the app, you pretty much don't need to go anywhere else.
Right.
So they're controlling your whole experience. They're harvesting so much data about you, even more than they are today.
Yeah.
And while I don't like Facebook that much, I have to tip my hat to them. This, I think, is a brilliant move.
Yeah. And I put this quote out there because I grabbed it and I think it came from The Verge's feed, but they said, I think it was during the Q&A or something, I said Facebook is going to be collecting usage analytics from Facebook Home, but promises it will be anonymized after a short time.
Yeah, and so when you pointed that out to me, I was like, holy crap.
Like after a short time after they've harvested all the data out of it?
How long is a short time? Is it moments? Is it hours? Is it weeks?
Is it 30 days? 90 days? A year? They don't really define that, but
yeah.
So don't worry, they're going to be taking your data, but it'll be anonymous eventually.
Yeah. Well, okay.
But again, the really bad part about that again is my mom, if she goes in to get a new cell phone and they sell her one of these HTC phones or any of these phones that have this pre-installed, she doesn't use Facebook, so she's okay. But anybody else who does, they're going to get the phone, they're going to set it up. It's going to say, hey, do you want to put in your Facebook account? It'll, you know, you'll have this great experience. And they'll go, bleh, okay, cool. And they'll love it because the features are really cool. But they're not going to understand or realize what they've given up at any given moment. Potentially. And I don't have any problem with it. I probably would do it myself. I like using Facebook. It's fine. But I understand what the trade-offs are, right? What I'm giving them versus what they're giving me. But I think most consumers don't. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
No, I think you're spot on. I think most consumers don't.
Are they planning on serving ads through this?
Yes, they are.
Oh, yeah.
They made that very clear.
Yeah, Zuckerberg, according to the text I was reading, was like smiling about it. He's like, yes, there will be ads.
So we didn't see the ads Ka-ching. In the presentation.
They're not in there yet, and they're not going to be in there at launch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, okay, so going back to the Android, the idea that Android is open and with Apple, this sort of thing wouldn't work out. Aside from the fact that Facebook may or may not be using this for, well, they are using this for their own gain. Aside from that fact.
Of course. Anybody who says it's not all their own gain, they're not doing this for users.
Sure. But.
Oh, God, no.
But. Aside from that fact, this kind of ability, is this beneficial to consumers or not? The ability to add that kind of functionality to a device, because even if Apple decides, you know what, we're going to do the face heads in iOS, but it's going to take some time until we get iOS 7.
I know one way to answer that for you. I mean, we have certain kinds of, we have Twitter integration, we have Facebook integration, you know, at least for like posting status updates.
Sure.
Stuff. And maybe that's not the same thing, but it is one thing that we do have in iOS.
But it's something that we had to wait for.
We did have to wait for it, but we have it now. So my question back to you is, how useful is that to any of us? I use it on occasion, and I do like it as a feature when I use it. I'm not a heavy Facebook user, though. So
that's actually a very good example of the difference between the two. Because, okay, cool. We can post from Facebook or post to Facebook or post to Twitter right from the share menu in most applications, whatever.
Right.
I don't care about that. What I care about are chat heads or whatever other stuff that like the Palm Pre had so long ago, the ability to not jump out of your current application. And those things are available on Android. Those types of things are already available. They're not available on iOS.
Yeah. Well, again, not without a jailbreak, but you probably could jailbreak and get those things if you really wanted them. And I kind of like that model better because I think most consumers don't think or care about that. And you could argue, well, they don't know they can even have it. So, you know, ask the question. But at the same time, it's like if you were really motivated, if that was the thing that drives you or the thing that you really wanted, you can figure out how to do it. Right?
Yeah, but it would require jailbreaking, and jailbreaking is becoming more and more complex all the time.
Is it really?
Yeah. Well, oh, yeah. They had to use, I think, maybe 4 or 5 independent exploits to get this last jailbreak to work.
Is there a tool I can download and run and it does it for me?
There was. Now it doesn't work because they
But again, eventually there will be, right?
But see, the thing is, it took a very concentrated effort by a lot of very smart people taking a lot of their own personal time to make that happen. And for them, I think that jailbreaking is almost
over. Is Apple beating them down? Are they going to quit?
Yeah. I think that is what the case is. It's too hard to do it, and it takes too much time, and there's no money in it for these people.
Sure.
But at the same time, you could say, in addition to that, the gains in iOS the abilities in iOS are growing, and the reason to have jailbreak is less and less as time progresses.
Well, except until today when you suddenly realized you wanted chat heads.
Yeah, I do want some chat heads.
So then you have a choice, right? You can either figure out this jailbreak stuff and hope that it still exists, or you can just go buy a phone with Facebook Home on it.
I'm not getting a Facebook phone.
And not saying that flippantly. I mean, saying that very seriously, it's good that you have those choices.
Yeah.
Right? If that's the thing that's going to drive your mobile experience, if that's the thing that you say, I need to have that on my mobile device, there is a solution for you. Right. And a simple one. Next time you go get a new phone, you pick one of these.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's good. I mean, that's consumer choice. Apple's not going to deliver that. And that's the experience that you're buying into when you choose an Apple product.
Well, that, you know, that gets us into the discussion of iOS 7 and the continuation of our discussion about what Apple needs to do to really make a change for the better in terms of what the expectations are from them right now, which is everybody's saying, oh, they're on the downfall. Well, what's happening
about your phone?
What? No, it's not about what's broken, but it's about what the innovation, the little teeny innovations. Granted, not everything is a huge innovation from other companies using Android, but stuff like Chat Heads is a great example of stuff that you know, we don't need just very incremental better stuff. I think that iOS 7 will have a lot of, or at least should have, a lot of stuff that would be very important to people. One of the things that's interesting about iOS 7, it's been said, you can't see who got this quote, but they're saying that Johnny Ive is pushing for a quote unquote flatter design in iOS 7, and that the engineers are getting access to, that the software engineers are getting access to the hardware mock-ups a little bit earlier on in the process, so we'll see a little bit better parity there.
I believe that was a Wall Street Journal article.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
Yep. Which is very good, and I like the idea of that integration, as we've talked about before. Apple did update the podcasts app.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And it doesn't have the reel-to-reel anymore. It doesn't have the big, dumb
buttons. It's still lame, though,
buttons.
Just so for everybody's... record.
It's so much better.
But it's so much better.
It is a lot better. Why do you say that it's lame? What don't you like about it?
I am adamantly against the fact that their support for enhanced podcasts, which I spend a lot of time doing and a lot of my audience appreciates, is still severely lacking. They don't, and it's Apple's format. That's the salt in the wound for me. Is this is Apple's format. I've chosen to support it, and they don't even support it in their own apps. So, and I've talked to some developers. This looks like it's actually a core problem in the audio, the frameworks that Apple makes available to developers by default that are in Xcode for doing audio playback and more so this enhanced stuff. And specifically, I'm talking about chapters. So if you bring up any enhanced podcast that has chapters in Apple's podcast app, and you click the button, you see chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, despite the fact that the metadata has actually chapter titles.
Oh.
And if you bring up that same file in Downcast or Instacast or any one of the other great third-party podcast apps, it displays correctly.
Interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, and I'm in an iOS development group, and I know a guy who's working on an app, and same kind of problem. And our best guess is that they're not making it available, because he's like, see that data? And I'm like, well, it's in there. So my guess is that Downcast and Instacast and guys have had to work around it. So they're somehow parsing the data separately or through some other mechanism to get it to display. And that's just lame, in my opinion. I mean, it's Apple's format. I generate the file in GarageBand. The metadata is inserted by one of Apple's applications, and they can't read it back in their own app. It's just inexcusable to me. So until they fix that kind of stuff, I'm going to continue to call it lame.
Fair enough.
But at the same time, the new user interface with the flat is much better. They've exposed all the controls. They got rid of that stupid reel-to-reel that like 90% of the people didn't even know was there. And that's where the chapter controls and all the other controls were before, like the multi-speed playback controls. Those have all been brought to the front. So it's much more discoverable in terms of the things that you can do when you're listening to a podcast. So I do applaud the changes. They are great, and I hope we see that happen across the board, and that's the impetus of this article, right? That we're going to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was a chat, a branch chat, which I'm not really familiar with what that is, but it consisted of...
Oh, branch is awesome.
Okay.
I just found out about it, too.
Okay.
Yeah, I just fell in love with it after finding out about it, too.
So there was one that involved John Gruber and Rene Ritchie and M.G. Siegler and a bunch of other people who know stuff about the inner workings of Apple. And I think the most interesting one was from John Gruber. And what he's heard is that iOS 7 is running behind and engineers are being pulled from OS 10.9 to work on that, which is something we saw that happen with the original iPhone.
That's going to put a lot of pressure on Apple's yearly release cycle for OS 10.
Do they have an explicit yearly release cycle for that?
Yeah. WWDC, they said, we're going to put out a new version of OS 10 every year.
Yeah, I think they need to drop that idea right now. Nobody's going to care.
I know.
I think
it was OS 10, right? It wasn't iOS.
Yeah, it was OS 10.
Yeah, okay. Just making sure I didn't...
I mean, I honestly wasn't aware of that. They do need to focus on iOS anyway, so it's not a big deal. And having that...
But I totally disagree with you on that, Michael.
Okay.
I really honestly do, because if I'm talking to people outside of the media kind of circle, and again, it's this craziness where it even came up in the Facebook thing today, right? And Facebook said that they're going to be updating the Facebook home thing every month or something like that. It's like crazy. Like,
right.
Why are we getting to this crazy release cycle? And really, what is broken about the things that we have? To me, it's getting almost overwhelming. Like, how quickly
yes.
we're demanding new features and functionality when a lot of the features and functionality that gets pushed out doesn't really work really, really well, is becoming less and less thought through. I think this drive for technology companies to continue to, like, try and push stuff out so quickly is actually taking things backwards. We're getting detrimental effects from it rather than a lot of benefits. And day to day, when I'm using my iPhone, I really have a hard time thinking of one thing where I pick up the phone and I go, oh, this would be so much better if it only did X. And
right.
when I ask people that question, like, what do you want this device to do for you that it's not currently doing? Most people have a hard time answering that question.
Yes.
Well, and that is an interesting thing, because at some point it becomes a situation where consumers don't necessarily know what they want, but they want something better. And that's kind of what Apple has always been able to deliver, right? Is what the consumers didn't know what they wanted until they got it.
You know what I think the problem, or at least part of the problem is? It's that companies are falling into what I think of as Firefox syndrome, which is you need to have a jillion updates happening all the time.
Yeah, that doesn't need to happen.
That doesn't need to happen. But because companies are doing that, consumers start to expect that to happen. They don't know what they want. They don't even really, in many cases, have features that they think are missing. It's just simply, oh, an update hasn't happened in the last 2 weeks. This is really bad.
Yeah, and so they're having to make. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so companies have to start rolling out new features all the time, just because consumers are expecting new features to roll out all the time. They don't care what they are. It's just, oh, there's another update. There's the new thing.
Yeah, they have to sit in a room and make up stuff. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure there's meetings going on at companies like now, like, oh my God, we got to have some killer new feature. What do you guys got?
Well, certainly. And that's, we've seen that with the most recent, the Galaxy S4. We saw a lot of really crazy features there. But I think that, as we've talked about before, there are some things that are low-hanging fruit, that are things that people would really benefit from, especially the push information stuff, as opposed to pull, where you say, I need to figure out what the traffic is. I have an appointment in an hour. as opposed to it telling you, hey, you're going to have to leave 20 minutes early. That kind of stuff.
Yeah, the Google Now kind of stuff.
Right. And
that's interesting stuff. Yeah, we talked about that last time, right?
Yeah, and the idea of integrating applications better throughout the platform on iOS. That's not a problem with Android at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's an inherent problem that's dictated by the design choices that Apple made.
But there are things they can do to improve it.
Yeah, they absolutely. But this is low level behind the scenes stuff, and these are not whiz bang bullet point features that marketing people are going to think are going to sell new devices. And so I'm with you on that aspect. So that's what I want to see in something like iOS 7. Is I don't want a bunch of new, you know, big whiz bang looks great in a keynote features. I want things working better. I want Apple focusing on. I had to give a presentation to my Mac users group last night, as a matter of fact, and it was on iOS file management. That was the most painful presentation I ever had to give.
That sounds like a joke. iOS file management.
But it was explained, and hands were going up, and there was a lot of interaction and a lot of questions, and the reason why is because iOS file management is such a mess, and it's almost like a non-thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well,
but you have to explain it to people because they don't understand, you know, what do you mean in iCloud I could only have one level of folders? What do you mean that, you know, all these things have changed? What do you mean that the apps own their application? What is sandboxing? I don't understand that, and why is it a good thing, or why am I going to hate it? So all of these things need to be explained, and that is a problem.
Yeah, if it needs explaining, then it's wrong.
Yeah, and here's a great example. Addressing.
When I'm a smart person, and I figured, oh, you know what? I've been working on this document that for a presentation for a while on a computer, and I wanted to bring it over to another computer, so I saved it to iCloud, and that worked pretty well. I'm working on this in text edit, and then I thought, I really want to go to another room and relax and work on this thing. I want to throw it on my iPad, and I figure, okay, cool. I've got iCloud on my iPad. I'll just open it on the, but, and then I just kind of thought, what do I do? How do I make that happen? And I realized that I can't make that happen, even though it is in iCloud for text edit. There's no text edit on the iPad.
iPad, so you can get at it.
What's that?
You don't have text edit on your iPad, so you can't get to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that just awesome that Apple included iCloud support for text edit? But there's no comparable app on iOS, so it just goes there and sits there.
So meanwhile, we use cool stuff like Dropbox or Transporter now, and you know all those other methods. But at the same time, though, even if you threw it into Dropbox, one, you either have to have a Dropbox app that supports it, or two, you have to open up the Dropbox app and then make a copy of it into whatever text editing app, if it's Textastic or Byword or Notational Velocity or whatever you want.
That's just too much thought. People should not have to think that much about how to just open a file. It's not about the tool. It's about the content. And that's what Apple has always been about.
You know, that's not a bullet point feature that they're going to throw up in a keynote and go, look how cool this is. We do file management on iOS.
No. But I mean, that is the biggest thing that they need to focus on right now is reducing the number of times in order to complete a task, I need to bounce back and forth between applications. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know what? We did see promising progress on that front last show when we talked about, what was it, Audio Hub or?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we need more of that kind
audio
of
bus.
Audio bus, yeah. More of that kind of integration. And so, I mean, that's what you're alluding to with chat heads. You know, that's a really limited scope of it, right? That's surrounding chat and messaging,
but that would really help.
We need that on a broader scale.
Absolutely. Stuff that doesn't require you to bounce between applications would make life a lot better. And stuff that allows you to, I mean, even the idea of aggregating that social stuff, or not just social, but also email in addition to the text messages. And I think that's actually something that is going to be on the first, is what the CEO said, that they're also going to be integrating email into the that Facebook experience. I'm not sure how that's going to be integrated in there, but I like the idea of thinking these are just people I'm interacting with. I don't want to have to bounce between a bunch of applications, see which ones have the little notification thing on it, and swipe between a whole bunch of pages to get to that information. It just should sort of all aggregate together. And I think that's, again, going back to Notification Center, that's one of the ways Notification Center totally falls short, in addition to the whole, I have to close these million things.
Right. The thing you're talking about, and the thing that's different with the HTC First, because it is integrated with the Facebook Home at a core level, is the one thing that they can do differently, apparently, is they can interact with the system notifications. So I'm assuming that the email stuff comes through exposing a lot of the lower level Android stuff, which would include the mail application and stuff like that. And so that is the one difference between, because they're going to make Facebook Home, I guess, available on the Google Play Store for these other devices. But the ones where it has, where Facebook has worked with the hardware manufacturer to integrate it at the, I would assume, I guess, kind of a firmware level or whatever, you're going to be able to get system notifications, and you're going to be able to get other lower level information in the Facebook Home layer that sits on top of Android.
You know, I've actually, I just realized I have a comment from one of our listeners, Brad. It's a little bit longer voicemail, but he has some interesting points to talk about regarding the whole Siri and assistant type stuff and the push stuff. So I'll let that run. Cool.
Hey guys, it's Brad from West Michigan. Hey, I wanted to, first of all, really thank you guys for all the hard work you put into the show. Really, really enjoy it. Tell all my friends about it. I can honestly say that the you three are certainly my top five favorite podcasters.
Without question,
I think you guys all bring a different personality and different viewpoints to each show, and I really enjoy listening to y'all. So thanks for that. The last show you guys put out, I'm sorry, this is going to be a little bit kludgy. I was hoping to be able to make an audio file for you guys, and I could edit it so I could sound really smart. But you're just going to get this kind of raw now.
Hey, it's cool. That's how we do it.
Too bad for me. the last episode, I think it was 172. And, yeah, 172, where you guys were discussing, well, but I don't have that wrong, where you were discussing you know, Siri and, you know, some things about what you'd like to see come from Siri, in the future, you know. You know, one of the things that, I just want to play devil's advocate, just for a second here, and maybe I'm off on this, and I certainly could be, it's been known to happen. But, you know, it doesn't seem like all that long ago that myself included, but a lot of people were pretty freaked out about the idea of, like, it had more to do with RFID tags, right? Where if you had an RFID or something RFID in your wallet, you walked into a retail store, that they would know who you are and know your purchases, and there could be, like, advertisements that would change based on knowing that you're there, and that would cater more to you, like, oh, you're a guy, you're 40 years old. You know, and there was this sense of invasion of privacy that takes place with some of this stuff. And I know when Jeff was talking about, you know, walking into a Starbucks and, you know, I want Siri to not only know that I'm at Starbucks, but I want her to order my favorite brew and I want it ready for me and then pay for it and all this stuff. And I love those ideas, but I also kind of wonder how far is too far with this. I'm not 100% sure I'm against it, but I'm not 100% sure I'm for it either. I don't know that I want my cell phone and who knows who else, Apple and other developers, anybody to know where I'm at, what I'm buying, and what I'm doing. I guess it's completely optional. You know, I mean, ultimately, maybe that's what it will be, is just, well, if you don't want them to know, then don't turn that feature on. And it could be that simple, and that's cool, to each their own. I just always grow a little bit weary over some of the.
Okay, well, it cut off at that point. There's another end of it, but we get the gist there.
Yeah.
And that is a really important thing to consider. I mean, for me, maybe it's because I'm young and naive, but I like the idea of having that personal assistant knowing everything about me. And I feel that if it's for my own gain, right, then it's worth it.
Yeah, if you're getting something out of it, then it's a little easier to swallow than if they're just taking the information.
If it's only for them to advertise to me in a better way or a more effective way,
then no.
Yeah, but if it's something where it knows about my plans, I mean, if it's exactly like, or if it's emulating what a personal assistant, a real human being personal assistant would be doing for me, that's awesome because I don't have to pay them.
Wait a minute. I'm totally with you on that aspect of it. I want to back up on the thing because we've been bagging a little bit on Facebook, and I've been complacent in this as well. You know, saying that, well, they're going to know a bunch of information about you. But I think the point in his voicemail where he talked about the opt-in and opt-out, I think as long as you have that capability in these systems, you know, where I can say I don't want this information collected. Personally, you know, I already assume that I use a credit card to make a lot of purchases and things like that. So there's a lot of data out there about all of us anyway. So I don't get mired in this too much, but I know and completely understand the people that do. But the point I'm trying to get to is, like, even from an advertising perspective, if Facebook is going to say, like, take their data, or Siri is going to take that data, or whoever, whichever system is going to take that data, they're going to aggregate. And even if they want to use that to give me more relevant advertising that I'm going to probably be more likely to respond to, but even more importantly, not be so irritated by.
Yeah.
To me, I don't mind that exchange of information. Like, I would rather they know that I have no need for, maternity clothes, right? And they don't show me those kinds of ads. I would rather they know what my interests are and know that I have no interest. I'm not an expensive car guy. So I don't freaking care that there's a new Lexus or Mercedes or a BMW out there, or I don't care that there's a new Rolex or Tagget watch or whatever. The kinds of stuff I get, like, I subscribe to Wired, right? There's a bunch of, like, high-end upscale stuff in Wired, but I'm not interested in any of that. So I don't even mind on both ends of the scale. I'm totally with you guys on the, like, I would love it if when I went into Starbucks, it knew exactly what I wanted to. And that sort of thing comes down to really a retail customer service experience. I mean, how many of us feel good when you go into a retailer or a company or, you know, like, I use a small local mechanic, but even if you go into your mechanic and they, like, know you, they know your name, they know about your vehicle. Oh, hey, are you bringing in your Honda Accord today? What's going on with it? Whatever it is, they have certain bits of information, and they don't remember that. None of us are, like, deluding ourselves to think that they're not pulling that up in the database. And when you come in, they give you that experience, right?
But it's about having the tools to give you that experience.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah. So this is a digital form of that. And if it makes my experience better, I'm kind of okay with doing that trade-off. But again, getting back to the original point, as long as that is my decision to make, right?
Yes.
I use Facebook, and the number one feature that they added that I absolutely love is I used to not use the Facebook login anywhere. And I don't think this was there originally, but now that I have the ability to say, okay, go ahead, you can use my Facebook to log in, but you cannot share any of my information. I think the option is, like you say, sharing is set to nobody. Then I started to use Facebook login more because I'm okay, because I like the convenience of letting me log in. Now, I don't assume that they're not knowing, like, every site that I visit, and that's valuable data to them, I guess, but you know, what are they going to do with that? Have they anonymized it? I haven't really thought those things through too much, but I'm willing to assume that they're going to use that information for the convenience of I have one login that I can kind of use at a bunch of different places. As long as I know that when I, you know, when I'm in whatever third-party service that I'm using, every action that I'm doing isn't showing up on my Facebook stream, because that annoys the hell out of me.
Right. Yeah.
You know, the thing that's a little bit frustrating for me is that when I'm using an opt-in service like the Starbucks app, which links to my Starbucks card, Starbucks knows when I get to the store. They know what order or what drink I order all the time. They know what time of day I'm in typically. And I mean, they have so much information about my consumer habits. So they've got that information. They send me advertisements for products that they know I have never, ever bought. Because I don't drink coffee at all. I do not like coffee. So don't send me ads or emails for half off coffee.
You're like Barry.
No, he's getting at a great point. I mean, that I've talked about this a few times. I don't remember if I've done it on this show or not, but you know, Google, you know, I use Gmail and I use a lot of Google services. So Google and, you know, Google Analytics is pretty much on every site on the internet, I'm pretty sure. And so they know, like, when I go to pay my insurance bill and I, you know, whoever, I use State Farm or Farmers or it doesn't matter who it is. But what irritates the heck out of me is when I've gone and paid my bill and then for the rest of the day, I get State Farm ads on every website that I do because every website that I go to uses Google ads. Right?
Yeah, I feel like this has happened way more often recently. I feel like
It's become worse and worse.
Yeah.
So that's a really bad usage of that data that they have about me. It's like if I just paid my bill on this site or if I visit this site, you know, every month, it's not that hard to figure out that, oh, maybe this guy is actually a customer of this company.
Yeah, so we should show him a different ad.
Yeah.
Why am I not seeing you can save money on Geico? Wouldn't that be much more valuable? Not only to me, but also to the advertiser. So it's the stupid use of this data. So that even makes me feel like as much as this seems like an invasion of privacy, they're not even going to use it right. So whatever. You're stupid.
Yeah.
Take it.
Yes. And okay, so then the other part of that is they've got all this information. Give me ads that or specials or whatever that are relevant for me. But then since you've got this information, use it in a way that benefits me in addition to you, which is where my dream of being able to walk into Starbucks and with a little assistance from Siri, my drink order is placed and paid for and waiting for me by the time I get to the counter.
You know what I envision when you talk about the Starbucks ordering thing? I totally envision like you're waiting in line, just sitting there patiently, not looking at anybody, just waiting. And then when you finally get up to the register, you just, they say, hi, what can I get for you? And then you don't really look at them. You just sort of hold up your phone to them and Siri goes, hi, I'm Jeff. I would like this drink. Thank you. But in that Siri voice.
But I mean, you know, even if they built a system, like how cool would it be, like we were saying with the Google Now, if Jeff, you're getting near the Starbucks, right? And Siri pops up and says, hey, Jeff. And so maybe Apple needs to take control of this experience, right? And so Siri pops up and says, hey, Jeff, I noticed you're getting close to your favorite Starbucks. Do you want me to put your drink order in for you?
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. And if it had,
if they
had a little system where they could see the face of the person, and so you do sort of wait in line, and then when you get up to them in line, they already see that you've been waiting there and that you've placed your order, and they just say, "Oh, your order's in," or however they would handle that.
Or at that point, it becomes a special perk for Starbucks reward card holders because now instead of waiting in line, your drink order goes in, independent of the length of the line. So you walk in, and while everyone else has to wait 5 minutes to get their drink, you walk in, you're in the store for a minute, and they say, hey, Jeff, we have your drink.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, and there's no reason that can't happen. So, you know, that's the sort of thing I think we were kind of talking about on the last show, right, is that the assistant is more assistive than it currently is.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So before we go any further with our stuff today, we have to talk about our show today has been brought to you by Squarespace, the beautiful and intuitive website platform that allows anyone to easily create professional web blogs, pages, online stores, and galleries on a single platform. It's one thing and it lets you do all of that stuff, and it's awesome. They've recently announced a new feature. It's Squarespace Commerce. You've probably heard about it. It allows you to add a fully integrated store to your website and instantly start accepting payments. And they have everything in this, soup to nuts. They have the ability to sell physical and soft goods, as in software goods, not like ham, I guess.
You could sell ham if you
wanted. I guess you could sell ham if you really wanted to, if you could handle that.
I'm in.
Yeah. You can easily add a store to any Squarespace website. So if you already have one, you can easily just add that and start selling those goods. They have store management, so they help you handle inventory, payments, shipping, all that stuff. You know, when my aunt was asking me about how can I set up a store, I have a whole bunch of stuff that I want to sell, but I want something that'll help me manage inventory. And Squarespace lets you do that, which is awesome. So in addition to the Squarespace Commerce, they, of course, have the wonderful blogs, pages, galleries that are not only very beautiful, they have tons of templates that you can choose from. You can try it out right now. So if you want, before I go any further, check it out, squarespace.com/communicators. Click on the Get Started button, and without having to sign up, put any information in, pay anything, you immediately can choose the template that you want. You can get all set up for a free 14-day trial, no credit card required. You can get it all set up the way you want, see how it works, because the way they do it is you start from a template, but you can totally customize this thing. And you don't have to download anything. You do this right in the browser. They have wonderful Ajax interaction to set this thing up. You don't have to be a designer. You don't have to know CSS or HTML. It's drag and drop stuff. Like if you want to upload a photo, you literally drag it from your desktop and throw it on the page. You don't even have to do an upload form if you have a modern browser. And everything is like that. However, if you do know how to do CSS and HTML and all that stuff, they let you do that too, which is awesome. So it's great for people who don't know how to do that, or maybe they do know how to do it, but they do it all the time and they don't want to mess with it. They just want a nice drag and drop WYSIWYG situation. And so it's great for people who want to do just regular web pages, or maybe you want to do a web page plus a blog. Maybe you're a company that wants to do that, or maybe you're an artist that wants to show off their work. You can do a gallery and a page. And like I said, it's all included. If you want to get the e-commerce thing, you got to go to the business plan, which is $24 a month. But with the other two, the standard and unlimited plans, $8 and $16 a month, you can do the pages, galleries, and blogs with the $16 a month. You get unlimited ones. You get 20 pages, galleries, and blogs on standard. They let you get a custom domain on any of these. They include 24/7 support. If you remember back during hurricane was that?
Sandy.
Yeah, Hurricane Sandy. Their data centers are in New York City, and their CEO actually got a call in the middle of the night and said, "Hey, the generators are out. There's only one on the roof. We thought we had enough gas to power all these generators, but it turns out that the basement flooded." So he went over there, wrangled up a team of people to actually do a human chain of carrying gas up to the generator on the roof to make sure that Squarespace didn't go down. So, wow. I mean, that's the kind of support that these guys give you. They never go down. If you get Reddited or Doug or whatever, the sites don't go down. It's awesome. So, I mean, if you want a web page, honestly, I would recommend going with Squarespace because they handle everything. They have the platform and they have the server to back the software. So you don't have to worry about updates on like WordPress blogs or anything like that. It's all taken care of. So it's really awesome. Check them out. Squarespace.com/communicators. Use that URL so they know they heard about them from us. And if you decide to buy after the 14-day trial, Use the promo code WHC4 for April or WHC5 for May, and that'll get you an extra 10% off. So check it out, squarespace.com/communicators. It's everything you need to create an exceptional website, and we thank them for their support of We Have Communicators.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Go team.
And so with that, what should we talk about? Do you guys want to hear about the Space Apps Challenge?
Yes.
Okay. So we had... I had Skip on earlier, and take it away, Michael, from an hour ago. All right, so I'm here with Skip Owens. He's a systems engineer at the Kennedy Space Center. So naturally, I had to get him on the show. I had to figure out a way somehow to get him on the show to talk about some space stuff. And thankfully, he brought a very great excuse to do that to my attention a little bit ago. It's the International Space Apps Challenge, and he's here to talk about what that is, when it is, and why you should be excited about it. So thanks for being on the show, Skip.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah. So why don't you just run down what the International Space Apps Challenge is?
All right. So basically, it's a 48-hour code-a-thon style event that's taking place both physically in 75 different cities across the world, and also virtually on the internet. We've even got participation from the International Space Station.
Oh, cool.
And basically, the event is actually more than just a code-a-thon, where, you know, a code-a-thon is typically just software. But with this particular event, we're opening it up to things like open hardware, data visualization, and citizen science. So it really gets into actually building physical things and not just coding.
Okay. So are they planning on adding new cities, or is it pretty well locked in at this point?
Absolutely looking at adding new cities. In fact, anybody who has some local support and is interested in you know, basically sponsoring a local event in your city, it's definitely not too late to go ahead and get a hold of us and add yourself to the list of cities.
Cool. Yeah, because I noticed that there wasn't one in Chicago, so that's the closest place that it would be for me.
Right.
So what are you working on? What's your project in this?
So my project in it, I really don't have one. I'm kind of one of those guys at Kennedy that gets involved in stuff kind of out of nowhere. So I'm one of those guys they call in when they're doing something, and like, hey, we think you've got an interest in this. So they pull me into it, and I get involved. In this particular effort, I basically helped them brainstorm some of the challenges initially. And then after they got that list whittled down to a manageable size, they got a team of us together to actually go through the challenges and try and hand pick, you know, a dozen or so.
Okay.
To put up on the website.
So did you work on this list of challenges? It includes software and hardware, things that people are going to be working on, and it's for 48 hours. Is that correct?
Correct. Okay. Yeah, it's April 20th and 21st.
Okay, so it's coming up. And the challenges are specific. They're listed on the website. And are they open to other options, or do they want people to focus on the challenges that are listed?
I believe they're open to suggestions even now. Actually, if you have suggestions for challenges, I believe they're taking inputs on those now.
Okay. Is it something that you have to get it approved by them, or is it something that the team wants to come up with and just kind of throw it out there when it's all finished?
I think what they're mostly looking for input right now is if you've got an idea on one of the challenges that's listed.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because if you read the challenges, they're somewhat open-ended. So they're really looking for the teams to come together and innovate, really think outside the box and bring something new to the table that even the people that came up with the idea for the challenge didn't even think of.
Sure. Yeah, it looks like it says there are over 50 challenges here. And you said that you were excited about a few of them. What's exciting you, or what's interesting to you about the various challenges that are here?
There's actually some really cool stuff going on this. One of them is called Catch a Meteor Tracker. And so the idea there is to it's kind of a citizen science type initiative where you want to get the general public involved in actually categorizing and tracking meteors when they reenter. It's like the event that we had in February over Russia, mm-hmm. and the one recently over the east coast of the U.S. around 8 o'clock at night. You had potentially hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people that might have seen this meteor reenter. And so the idea is, what if we made an app for a mobile phone that let all those people basically enter the time and the location where they saw that meteor enter, and it would actually prompt them to hold their phone up and say, hey, this is where I first saw the meteor. This is where it ended. And basically from that small amount of information, back calculate the orbit of where that meteor came from.
Oh, cool.
So I think that's kind of the main idea behind that one, is if we can actually get some citizen science information and actually start categorizing more and more of these meteors.
Yeah, my main interest in understanding the challenge was what sort of things they were looking, or the group was looking to get people working on and excited about. But I guess it's just they want people to work on stuff that involves people who aren't necessarily working directly with NASA or other space companies to get an interest in what's going on, or get more information out to the public about what's going on in space, in the space industry, and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, they're really pushing to get basically anybody that's interested involved, not just software and programming people.
Yeah.
Basically anybody, if you're an artist, you're into visualization, we've got all this great data that's made publicly available, but it's not very useful if you can't get at it and you can't do things with it. So that's really what this whole event is about, is trying to use this data to the betterment of the whole planet.
Yeah. So there are the software options, but there are also hardware options. Do you have any particular hardware ones that you are excited about?
I'm looking at one right here. It's a deployable greenhouse. Let's see, what else do they have here? Got a soil testing kit. So there's a whole variety of different things, and it's actually not just space related. It's also earth sciences related.
Okay, cool.
So there's a lot of variety in the challenges that they've got going on.
I liked this one, the 7 minutes of science: develop a concept to make use of 150 kilograms of ejectable mass during the entry and landing phase of a Mars mission to accomplish scientific or technical objectives.
Yeah. Well, there's another one I know that you might be interested too. I know you're kind of into these space simulation games.
Yeah.
So there's one out there called Moonville. and I'm not really into the whole Facebook game thing, but yeah, it's kind of a take on Farmville, but it's basically lunar mining. And it's a kind of a social simulation game based on lunar mining.
Is it called Moonville on the page?
I think that's basically the idea behind it, yes.
I'm looking at bootstrapping space industry, develop a game to virtually build a lunar industry.
Yes.
Cool. And I see one that's Kennedy Space Center 2040.
Yeah, yeah. And
is that one of the more artistic ones that you're looking at?
Yeah, it's basically an idea of, what would Kennedy Space Center look like in the year 2040? And, who would be using it? What are all the different things that the center would have to do to basically service all the different customers that we would have?
Cool. Yeah, that one is pretty interesting because you do have a lot of specialized stuff there already. And if you don't really realize it until you go and drive around and see all the stuff. But for example, one of the things that kind of made sense to me when I saw it, but I never thought about it before, was the fact that you guys have liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen facilities there. So you have, do you produce the liquid oxygen down the road, right? But then do you also produce liquid hydrogen there as well?
I'm actually not sure where they get the liquid hydrogen.
Because I thought I saw some on the crawler way pretty close to the VAB when I was roaming around there at some point, but I'm not sure where they get that stuff. Of course, they have giant tanks as well that house all that stuff that are fairly far away from the launch pads for safety.
Right.
But, I mean, there's so much stuff going on there to support. It's just a city to support everything that's going on. And I actually got a chance to go under the launch pad, the 39B, and hear about all the stuff that they're doing to renovate it for third-party customers that would want to use the launch pad. And if you think about it, they have to have things like, you know, of course, the rocket fuel, and they have to have data back and forth between the rocket and the launch center, but they also have to have things like ventilation and stuff for cooling, not only the rocket, but the astronauts inside, and just tons and tons of stuff. So that would be, I wonder what that would look like in 2040.
Yeah, and you look at all the different commercial industries that are looking at the Space Center, the shuttle landing facility, and you know, we're getting a lot of interest in these industries to come in and utilize some of the assets that we've got now that the shuttle has been retired. So
yeah,
the landscape is definitely going to change, and when you look that far into the future, it could change pretty drastically. I mean, if you look back, you know, 30 years ago from here, you know, it was much, much different.
Yeah, definitely. So if you want to find more information about it, go to spaceappschallenge.org. There's tons of information there. You can see all the different cities and locations that it's taking place, including the space station. I think that is updating according to its real location in space?
Yeah, they'll be participating live. In fact, you know, that's actually a good segue. You know, there's really no excuse. If you're interested in this type of thing, if you're interested in space and you think you have something to add, you know, absolutely get involved. Even if there's not something locally in your area, get on and collaborate online. You know, we're setting it up so basically anybody that wants to can participate.
So how do you join if you're someone who's not near a city that'll be able to do it, if you want to collaborate online? What's the
process? There's directions
there
on the website on how you check in, and they'll actually help you form either an online virtual team or get involved with one of the physical teams virtually.
Okay, and so those teams will have what they're working on, and you can figure out where you want to go?
Right. The first day, everybody gets there. You can sign up ahead of time if you know there's a challenge that you really want to get involved with. Mm-hmm. In fact, you can sign up right now and say, yeah, we've got a team, or we've got a couple of people that are going to work on this particular one.
Okay.
And we've got some great you know, people that are involved with us. It's not just a NASA thing. We've got people from all over the planet that are helping us out. You know, the National Science Foundation, the European Space Agency, you know, the two of the industry partners. Then we've got some local partners that you might have heard of. Rovio, you know, the makers of Angry Birds.
Oh, yeah.
And the Big Nerd Ranch is also supporting the effort.
Excellent.
So we've got over 100 different organizations that are pitching in.
Very cool. All right, so spaceappschallenge.org. Go there, check it out, get involved. It's April 20th through the 21st, 48 hours. Get on it. Thanks for being here, Skip.
Great. Thanks, Michael.
Cool. So thanks again to Skip for coming on and talking to us about that. If you haven't, if you have any interest in doing software or hardware stuff for the Space Apps Challenge, check it out. Space Apps, what was it? spaceappschallenge.org.
I want to go to Big Nerd Ranch so bad.
Yeah, that would be really awesome. Cool. They make some good stuff.
That's like my dream vacation. How nerdy I am.
go on vacation and talk about building apps and have them show you how to do stuff. They do good things. Didn't they do the Facebook app? Or significantly help them?
I don't know. They have a cool free app that is campsites. You know, if you do a lot of camping and stuff like that, it'll find, it'll use your location to find like different camping sites and stuff like that.
That's very cool.
Called Campware.
Okay. We'll have to check it out.
I think it was developed by like, it was like one of the projects that they used for like teaching how to develop for iOS, and then they turned it into an app.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. They do all kinds of programming, but I so want to go.
Yeah.
Someday.
Definitely. All right. So I think it's time, unless you guys have anything else to talk about, I think it's time to get on to our picks. Jeff, do you have something this week?
Of course I do. And this week, my pick is, I think it's just an iPad app, but it might be iPhone. And if it is, I'm going to feel stupid because someone will point it out later. But anyhow, it's called. Oh, what do you think it is?
I have no idea.
Oh, see, and had you picked it, I'd be like, holy crap, how'd you figure that out? It's called Haiku Deck. And it's an application that lets you build presentations and slideshows. And the way the tools work, it makes pretty good looking presentations. And then you can play them back out of your iPad, and you can set them up as HTML. So you can push them out to a website, and you can play them from your computer as well. And it has a lot of really nice themes. And then you can buy additional themes in app if you want, and it'll build charts for you and graphs. And they have links to a lot of unrestricted license images that you can drop in as well. So it's like all the stuff you need to put together a nice presentation, it's all built in. And then if you need to grab other assets, like maybe have photographs in your own photos library on your iPad, it can go and grab that content too. And it just makes really nice presentations. And I believe it's free. And what you pay for are additional themes.
It is free. And it's iPad only.
Yep.
And I was able to find that on getappler.com.
Oh, what a handy website.
Indeed.
Gratuitous plug. But still, it's all right there.
Yep. Cool. Haiku Deck.
Haiku Deck, spelled just like it sounds.
Yeah. All right, Adam, what's your pick this week?
I am going to once again prove that I am a child of the 80s and pick the Rubik's Cube app.
Yeah, I saw that you just liked that on Appler.
Well, yeah. So one of the things that both my wife and I have always strived for, being children of the 80s, was we knew people who could solve the Rubik's Cube, and I never could figure it out. I could never figure out how to do it. So the coolest thing and the number one reason I bought this app is it has a teacher mode in it. So in addition to being like, it has a virtual Rubik's Cube and you can use it to, you know, do the Rubik's Cube, it has a teacher app built into it, and it will teach you how to solve the Rubik's Cube.
Ooh.
Yeah, so if you're good at memorizing stuff, you can actually learn the specific moves that you need to do to be able to solve a Rubik's Cube.
Wow.
So for that alone, it's 99 cents. It is worth the buck. And you can go to parties and impress your friends and show them you can how brilliant you are, and they'll think you're a genius, and you didn't really just have to memorize a bunch of moves. But it's awesome.
That's actually really cool.
So how well does the teacher work? Have you been learning how to solve them?
Oh, yeah. I solved it for the first time. It took me, you know, like half a day to kind of walk through. It takes a little while to understand the sort of term. You have to learn the terminology. And the teacher's great because it walks you through step by step each kind of terminology. And then you have to start to learn sort of the positioning of the different colors on the different sides and edges and things like that. But once you kind of grok it, once you get it, and this will really help you understand how it works, then it all starts to click. So it worked for me again. And now it's just a matter of getting better at it and doing it faster and what have you. But I have never solved a Rubik's Cube in my life until I got this app.
Sweet.
So for that alone, it's worth a buck.
Very cool.
And it's the official one. There's only one official one, and it's called, I think it's called Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, Rubik's.
From Magmic Incorporated.
Yep. Awesome. I should get that.
And then buy a Rubik's Cube, which you can get on Amazon.
Right, yeah, exactly.
For probably not much more than this app.
Yeah. Okay, so I've got, I think I've talked about weather apps a lot in the past and how much I hate them. Because they all suck.
Yeah, you hate them.
So this one, this is a great weather app. And the crazy thing about it is it's not even an app. It's a like a web clip type thing. So it's a website that you go to, forecast.io. And you can do this on your computer, on your iPad, your iPhone, whatever. And on your iPhone or your iPad, if you save it to your home screen, not only it won't just be a web clip or a shortcut to the web page, it will actually be its own self-contained app. And this thing so rocks. So what it does is the big selling point on this thing for me is the forecast part. The radar isn't as great as I would like, but it's there and it works. And honestly, I feel like with the forecasting features, it's almost not necessary because the forecasts give you all the information that you want. So when you pull it up, it tells you, it can actually find your current location, of course. It says that right now it's 47 degrees and partly cloudy here, which is actually pretty reasonable as of late. And down right below it, you see next hour, it's going to be partly cloudy for the next hour. And for the next 24 hours, it's going to be partly cloudy, partly cloudy later this evening. I won't be a weatherman, I guess. And then right below that, my favorite thing is this little timeline that shows you, as time progresses throughout the day, what the temperature is going to be, and whether it's going to be cloudy, clear, rainy, snowy, like light rain, light snow, heavy rain, heavy snow, all that kind of stuff, right there, and like hour by hour. And then, of course, you can tap next week, and you can see tomorrow, Friday, it's going to be a low of 27, high of 51, which totally rocks for over here. You tap it, and then it'll give you that same bar that shows you all that great information. So you can tell like what the best time is going to be to go out for a run because it's going to be nice and warm. Or if it's going to be clear or cloudy or partly cloudy. I mean, it's awesome. It's exactly what I've been looking for, except for the radar part. But the radar part is not bad, and it's free. You just go to forecast.io and you bookmark it, and there you go. You got the magic. So check it out. It's awesome. I've been using it more than any other app that I, any other weather app that I have on my phone. So it's totally worth it. Have you guys heard about that one?
Nope.
I think it's by bookmarked it.
I think it's by the Dark Sky guys. I'm nice. Pretty sure they do this.
Huh.
I could be wrong. I can't find any information about who does it in the app, but
Dark Sky is the app, I believe, that when I was in San Jose in December, it locked onto that location. And now no matter what I do, I get precipitation updates for San Jose.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is by Dark Sky. Don't worry about whatever you just said, Adam or Jeff.
Yeah. I'm not discounting the forecast.io. Just pointing out that I have this very weird problem with their other app. And I'm probably like the only person on the planet that has this.
Yeah. Check it out. I mean, it's free, so no obligation.
I like the little animations for the weather forecasts.
Yeah, they're really descriptive.
Sort of like doodles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really nice and simple. So with that, of course, you can find our iPhone picks in the show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com is the email address. You can send us emails or audio comments if you want to record them and then send them over that way. It's actually a little bit easier for me to do that. You can call us, 202-642-6667. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. And of course, we thank Squarespace for sponsoring this show this week. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. He's at jgamet on Twitter, and zazzle.com/jgamet is his Zazzle store.
You doing? And it's always great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Are you doing anything on app.net?
On app.net, I'm jgamet, just like I am on Twitter.
It makes sense.
Yep.
Have you been getting into the app.net? I haven't really. I have one, but I'm not really sure what to do with it. It's too confusing.
Think of it like Twitter, but you can say more.
Well, yeah, I get that part, but I don't like the fact that there are different apps. Like there's the Twitter app and there's the chat app and there's, I don't know, it's weird. And there aren't a lot of people talking on there that I care about.
Well, I'm there.
Well, that is true. So I take it back.
Adam is there.
Adam Christensen of the MacCast. Is that who you're talking about?
That would be the very one.
Okay. At MacCast.com?
I would be there.
Yeah, you're there. You're at MacCast on app.net?
Yeah, MacCast. Yep.
Cool. Member.maccast.com is the member version of the show.
Yep. Yep. I just did an episode with George Starcher on the OS X keychain.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's an important feature.
Yeah. If you want to know all about that and what it is and what you can do with it and what have you. So
I'm going to have a listen to that. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter. Also, GetAppler. It's at GetAppler on Twitter. And GetAppler.com is the website. Check it out. With that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
Stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No.